Approval. Member FDIC.
TCU, fostering a horned frog family, committed to helping students make global connections intellectually and professionally. More at tcu.edu. TCU, learning to change the world.
From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker. Today, some answers to pressing questions about national security and a view of Dallas as the city of fear instead of the city of hate. But first, Friday marks 50 years since the murder of John F. Kennedy changed our country. A young president from Massachusetts had a complicated relationship with his vice president from Texas, Lyndon Johnson, but some historians say they also came to deeply respect each other. KERA's Shelley Koffler takes us back to the day that ended one presidency and launched another.
There's Mrs. Kennedy, and the crowd yells, and the President of the United States.
At Dallas's Love Field, any concerns about Texans admiring their president seemed to dissolve. Adoring fans cheered and waved as President Kennedy and the First Lady stepped from Air Force One and climbed into an open limousine. In an audio recording Lady Bird Johnson made later that day, she recalled the welcoming crowds that lined the path of the motorcade.
The streets were lined with people, lots and lots of children, all smiling, placards, confetti, people waving from windows.
Historian Mark Updegrove, director of the LBJ Presidential Library in Austin, says November 22nd began just as Vice President Johnson had hoped.
He wanted Texas to smile on President Kennedy. The crowds were enormous and effusive in their admiration, and so no one was more pleased than Lyndon Johnson.
Updegrove says any resentment Johnson may have felt at losing the Democratic presidential nomination to Kennedy in 1960 had passed. Johnson expected to be Kennedy's running mate again in 1964, and the Texas trip was raising important campaign contributions. Then the motorcade passed the Texas School Book Depository.
Suddenly, there was a sharp, loud report, a shot.
Mrs. Johnson at first thought it might be firecrackers, part of the celebration. Then she heard two more shots. A Secret Service agent threw the vice president to the floor, and the motorcade raced towards Parkland. At 2:38, less than 3 hours after the shooting, Vice President Johnson was back at Love Field, aboard Air Force One, being sworn in by Judge Sarah Hughes as the 36th president of the United States.
I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute.
I think he had no doubts about his ability to lead and govern. I think he knew that the Kennedys were beloved by the nation and the media. One of the things he said was that the media was so charmed by Kennedy, like a rattlesnake charming a rabbit. And I think he realized, probably in his most candid moments, that he didn't have that charisma. Lyndon Johnson had other powers.
And in the coming days, the powers of the new president, who'd spent 3 decades in Congress, would be tested as the world wondered about assassination conspiracies and the ability of the United States to persevere. Johnson acted quickly to investigate President Kennedy's murder. He conferred with former Presidents Truman and Eisenhower and tried to reassure world leaders. In a phone conversation 3 days after the shooting, he promised Martin Luther King Jr. he would continue Kennedy's civil rights initiative.
One of the great tributes that we can pay in memory of President Kennedy is to try to enact some of the great progressive policies that he sought to initiate.
Well, I'm going to support them all, and you can count on that, and I'm going to do my best to get other men to do likewise, and I'll have to have y'all's help. I never needed more than I do now.
Well, you know you have it, and just feel free to call on us for anything.
Then on November 27th, 5 days after the assassination, President Johnson addressed a joint session of Congress for the first time.
All I have, I would have given gladly not to be standing here today.
He offered continuity as he pledged to deliver on much of what John F. Kennedy had promised.
The dream of conquering the vastness of space, the dream of partnership across the Atlantic and across the Pacific as well, the dream of a Peace Corps in less developed nations.
And said Johnson, the dream of equal rights for all Americans, whatever their race or color.
I think it wasn't so much Kennedy's legacy that Johnson was aiming at in his own presidency. He wanted to finish what Franklin Delano Roosevelt had begun in his administration. And one of the things Franklin Roosevelt left unaddressed in the New Deal was civil rights. Lyndon Johnson believed that he could do it, and in fact, he did.
Historian Mark Updegrove says Johnson went further to ensure civil rights by passing the Voting Rights Act in 1965 and the Fair Housing Act in 1968. His critics remember that Johnson greatly increased American troops in Vietnam, and casualties soared. His admirers remember him for his Great Society legislation that included Medicare, Medicaid, and the War on Poverty. Decades hence, Updegrove sees Presidents Kennedy and Johnson as complementary figures in history. He agrees with Liz Carpenter, an aide to Johnson, who put it this way.
John F. Kennedy inspired, which Lyndon Johnson was incapable of doing, and Lyndon Johnson delivered.
America must move forward.
Shelley Koffler, KERA News.
We've been talking to North Texans who suffered through the aftermath of the president's assassination as part of our JFK Voices project. Today, a journalist shares her memory of a small town united in sorrow and her concern for our future.
I'm Katie Sherritt. I live in Fort Worth. I was 16 when Kennedy was killed. The news hit Permian High School like a blast. I mean, it was like a sonic boom traveling through that school. You could see the instant people knew. People were bursting into tears. I mean, it was amazing. And then, of course, we went into this weekend of shared mourning, because at that time, there were only 3 television channels, and in some places, less than that. So we were all watching the same thing at the same time. When I moved to Fort Worth and began journalism work and began to go over to Dallas and talk to people over there, it became clear to me that Dallas, not so much a city of hate, but a city of fear. There was so much fearfulness of the other, fearful of people who didn't look like me, who didn't worship like me, who loved differently than I do. It's still there, and it's still in Texas today. It's not just Dallas. You can see that fear in the rhetoric of some of our elected officials. This rugged individualism that scorns community is very scary. And I would hate to see that shadow arise again.
That was Katie Sherritt. You'll hear more from her tomorrow on Think at 1 p.m. Visit the JFK Voices page at keranews.org for more stories. And remember, KERA will have 2 hours of live programming on Friday's anniversary from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Since the former NSA contractor Edward Snowden began leaking classified documents showing its vast reach, the National Security Agency has been trying to make its case to the public. The NSA's director of compliance came to SMU last night, and Lauren Silverman was there.
This is John DeLong's first visit to Texas on business. His grandparents are actually from Beaumont, and he received a warm welcome at SMU. DeLong came to Dallas for a public conversation on the agency. He says the negative headlines about a lack of oversight are inaccurate, that the NSA has been beefing up its self-surveillance over the past few years.
We've actually quadrupled the number of folks working in compliance. There's over 300 folks. I don't think many people understand that.
Just this week, the NSA declassified hundreds of pages of documents, including a judge's ruling that the government repeatedly exceeded its authority for collecting metadata from Americans' emails. That worries 28-year-old Ashley Carlisle. She came to ask the question on many Americans' minds.
What do you know about me?
And while she didn't find that out exactly, she says the conversation did shed some light on how the agency goes about obtaining a warrant to get more information on someone.
But I would like to know more. Hopefully they'll have more debates like this.
John DeLong reassured the audience there will be more open conversations and that the agency won't just stand by until the controversy subsides.
The confidence of the American people is very, very important to us. We have lived in a world of secrecy. We're trying to get a lot more information out.
DeLong points to a new website called IC on the Record, which features declassified surveillance documents, and he says the agency is also working on an annual report to release to the public. Finally, he promised you'll see more NSAers at open events like this one. The hope is that giving a human face to the agency will make it easier to trust. Lauren Silverman, KERA News.
From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker.
Support for KERA comes from you, our members, and from Baird, Private Wealth Management, Public Finance, and Investment Banking. Information available at rwbairdtexas.com. Robert W. Baird & Company, member SIPC. The Lyda Hill Foundation, for support of in-depth coverage of health, science, and education news in North Texas.